This is Donnie Rose, and you are tuned into Word Life, where we unpack the intersections of literary art, music, politics, and revolution. Art imitates life. Life is often a series of rebellions. Let's dive into the messages inspired by the movements. Before rap music was the most purchased genre of music on the planet, before rap songs were featured in commercials and films, or vilified by politicians, or used to market practically any product imaginable, before hip-hop culture was a global phenomenon that connected billions of people from all walks of life, before rap songs became billionaire entrepreneurs, or inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, or had their lyrics registered in the National Library of Congress, before rap beef ended in bloodshed, before rap lyrics were used as evidence in court cases, before rappers were lifetime achievement honorees, and before American presidents invited hip-hop artists to the White House, rap was the least developed of hip-hop's four elements. The art and culture that the world recognizes as hip-hop was born nearly five decades ago in the Bronx on Sedgwick Avenue, on August 11th, 1973 to be exact. I know that date as it predates my own birth by less than a decade. I sometimes consider hip-hop to be an undeniable part of my genetic makeup, because why else would my Leo birth be on the same date as the official coronation of the culture? Hip-hop music and culture have influenced my philosophical outlook, the way I talk, the way I dress, and my relationship to Black identity for basically my entire life. And whether I am aware of every new artist, song, or subgenre of the art that emerges, the depths of the culture that's embedded in me knows no bounds. And that is because at its core, I recognize it similar to how I recognize myself, as a vessel designed to push back against the status quo, as something to make noise in spite of the muzzle America has attempted to place on folks that look like me since we were first forcibly placed here. The origin story of hip-hop is not always told with complete accuracy, and that is largely in part to how big it became. Hip-hop began as a revolution, a socio-political act intended to reduce gang activity in 1970s New York City among Black, Latino, and Afro-Caribbean youth by giving a creative outlet to latchkey kids who were disenfranchised within the largest city in the nation. The pioneers of hip-hop culture, the DJs, hosted park jams where they spun soul and disco over breakbeats as graffiti artists tagged city blocks. Initially, MCs were nothing more than vocal moderators of the park jams, leading crowds in call and response chants on behalf of the DJ. By the early 80s, the voice of the MC had taken center stage in the culture as rappers along coastal lines were becoming household names in urban homes all over the country. Rap started in a whimsical place, as its earliest MCs mostly rhymed about partying, style, and other lighthearted topics. Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five's 1982 song, The Message.
Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head.
Did, however, foreshadow the reality-based direction rappers would soon take by detailing the trappings of inner-city living and the perils of poverty. And by the end of the decade, artists such as N.W.A., Public Enemy, X-Clan,
let me tell you about blackness,
and Boogie Down Productions,
that's the sound of the police,
began to emerge with lyrics that spoke to the angst, disparity, and socio-political implications of Black American life. This was the world of hip-hop Marcel P. Black was introduced to as a small child growing up in rural Oklahoma. It is the code he carries as an independent MC, despite the current climate of rap music. For over the past decade, Marcel P. Black has been a reputable mainstay in the underground, indie, southern hip-hop community, and has stood on the principle that hip-hop is a weapon that can be used to galvanize the masses towards radical change. As a looming figure with the stature of a Killer Mike and an onstage intensity that matches his physical prowess, Marcel rhymes ferociously about freedom and revolution. He tours the country rocking dive bars, schools, and indie hip-hop festivals with a delivery rivaling that of a Baptist preacher or a New Age chairman in the Black Panther Party. He is also the unofficial leader of the Real MCs Don't Rap Over Vocals movement, a campaign he initiated years ago that discourages rappers from performing live over their backing vocals.
Nigga, hell no. I am my people's keeper, sworn to protect. Put the sword to a neck of any devil trying to flex. Fighting for freedom with the heater on deck. Put the Lord in the text for the rebels on the set.
Revolution on the radio.
They won't even let you in the station if you're rapping like you're educated. But they'll push you if you're ignorant and celebrate it. Make your paper, I'll get it cracked. They'll never get us free. We gotta make it happen. Organize, strategize, and put a plan to action.
Marcel is also one of my closest friends and brothers, with who I've shared community in every way with for nearly 20 years. We have labored side by side as youth development workers on behalf of young Black folks who lived in the disparate conditions Marcel's music speaks about. We have collaborated as artists and organizers, building platforms for generations of Baton Rouge creatives. And in the year 2016, as Baton Rouge was imploding from the police assassination of Alton Sterling and the subsequent brutality levied upon protesters, Marcel and I were two of the leading voices mobilizing our community to take action and creating space for healing. 2016 was also the year of Marcel's quintessential release, Cry Freedom, an album that many in Baton Rouge deemed as the soundtrack to that summer of civil unrest. The 10-track LP, which was in production years before summer 2016 and ready for completion before Alton Sterling was killed, was an unexpected guide to living under the duress of a militarized police state, and also a testament to the socio-political conditions that result in a man being shot to death by law enforcement while selling CDs outside a convenience store. In this episode of Word Life, I talk with Marcel about the album's title track, Cry Freedom, and the emotions involved in releasing his most prolific body of work at a time that his adopted city splitting at the seams. I began our conversation by asking Marcel about the theme and sequencing of the song Cry Freedom and his reasons for titling the album Cry Freedom.
So originally I was working with a record label called Real Profit Entertainment in Baton Rouge, and the beat was originally for some other artists, and it wasn't the type of song that ended up being with mine. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like a politically conscious war cry, you know what I'm saying, or whatever you want to say. But, you know, the artist didn't choose the beat. I talked to the producer, Joe, on the track, and he kind of stretched it out. He stretched out the sample in the beginning. And, like, I'm a church boy, so, like, and I like aggressive music, you know. And just the way the beat was, it just kind of spoke to me. And everything about it said, pour your heart out, pour your soul out. Everything about it said, pour your heart out, pour your soul out. And I watched the movie about Steve Biko called Cry Freedom, in which Denzel starred, or what have you. And I just thought, you know, Cry Freedom. It just said so much to me, what have you. And originally the album was supposed to be called By Any Means. I began on the album in summer 2008, and, you know, the album didn't come out until summer 2016. And just as the album progressed and kept on working, I'm like, you know, By Any Means, like, you know, everybody kind of uses Malcolm X, you know, in you know, in their presentations and things of that nature. And I just wanted to try something different and, you know, speak about a different Pan-African revolutionary within Stephen Biko. And so that just kind of became the name of the album. As it pertains to summer 2016, if you was in Baton Rouge at that time, you might know Cry Freedom as, like, the song of the summer. You know what I'm saying? It's a song that actually came out. No, it was recorded in maybe 2012 or 13. And, you know, the album come out 2 years later. But, you know, it just so happened that the album came out 2.5 weeks after Sterling was lynched, you know what I'm saying, in Baton Rouge by Baton Rouge PD. And it was a heavy time. You know, you and I was trying to organize and have these meetings and trying to lean on the city council and putting together benefits. And it was just a lot of stuff going on at the time. And inadvertently, the song just kind of spoke to the conditions. You know, the song was all about protest. The song was just all about struggling and fighting against, you know what I'm saying, systematic oppression, fighting against police brutality, and just, you know, just like putting your heart and soul on the line for what you believe in. And during that time, like, you know, it was wild. It was definitely a moment in Baton Rouge.
We then talk about the emotional toll the track had on Marcel during an album listening session he hosted within a week of Alton Sterling's assassination and the protests in Baton Rouge.
I was terrified. I was terrified because if you remember, so Alton Sterling gets lynched on July 5th. And like, I'm a career conscious artist, right? I've always rapped about Black revolution, Black freedom, Black empowerment. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, and I've always done, you know, I always did a whole bunch of work with young people, specifically in the area code where Alton Sterling was lynched at. And so I guess because I'm a conscious rapper who works with kids, I was immediately called into leadership. And it sounds cool when you're rapping about it. It sounds cool rapping about revolution. But when everybody's looking at you like, okay, now what you gonna do? You know what I'm saying? And I was terrified. I remember, you know, having meetings with the Nation of Islam at the mosque in Baton Rouge on Plank Road. I remember talking to Alton Sterling's auntie, and she prayed over me. I was going to work. And we was on the phone, and she prayed over me. You know what I'm saying? Miss Vita, you know what I'm saying? She prayed over me. And everybody's looking like, what you gonna do, what you gonna do, what you gonna do? You know what I'm saying? So it's easy to talk about it, it's easy to rap about it. But like, when it's time for, when the revolution's at your front door, like, you know, like we saw what happened in St. Louis and with Trayvon Martin and all these other places. But when it's literally, you know, the place where Alton Sterling was lynched was like 3 blocks from where you and I used to work. And we passed the CD man all the time. And just seeing all the protests, you see all these Black people, you see the police, you see all the news cameras coming there, you're terrified, you know what I'm saying? Because, you know, on top of, you know, loving our people, organizing our people, working with young people in Baton Rouge, with fathers, with husbands, you know what I'm saying? We have people to be responsible to. And so you feel that pull and that push between wanting to, you know, fight for your people and wanting to stay alive for your people, you know what I'm saying? And so I want to say it might have been 2 weeks. So it might have been a week before the album release. It was like maybe 10 days after he was lynched. And it was maybe a week before the album release. We had a listening party at studio, at Bottom Line Studios. And we listened to the album, and Cry Freedom is the very last song on the album. And for the first time, I heard the song like it wasn't me. Like, I heard the song like, wait, that's me rapping. I'm listening to the song like, man, this is really intense. And I'm like, yo, that's me rapping. And I bust into tears. You know what I'm saying? Because it was super tense. I remember, like, you know, me and Donnie had something called People First when we was doing some organizing. And then we had People First came last, ironically. It was Black Men Think. No, Black Men Talk. And we was already just kind of having these circles where brothers could come together. You know what I'm saying? It just had this real conversation. So for this particular time, I remember we met at the Mesa building and we politicized Black Men Talk. And we tried to organize brothers and have a conversation to the point where it was like, look, like, Black men need to talk about what's going on. And if you remember, like, there was even somebody talking about there was some white dudes with guns across the street. Remember? Somebody came and was like, whatever. So, like, it was a real tense time in the city because of, you know, it was just a real tense time in the city. And I just remember listening to that music and like, man, like, you know, at one point, I almost didn't want to put the album out. And I almost didn't want to put the album out because, you know, I'm super subconscious about stuff, but like, you know, I didn't want people to think that I was trying to capitalize off of what was going on. I felt conflicted, right? I felt conflicted because I knew the content of the album, and I felt conflicted. I remember there was a conversation with Minister Willie Muhammad from Mosque 46 in New Orleans, and there was a conversation with Miss Vita, you know, Alton Sterling's aunt, and my brother Jasiri X, and they was like, "Yo, we need this music more than now." And so all that to say, that particular night, man, we listened to this music, you know, studio full of, you know, I want to say it was people had bottles and we had chicken and, you know what I'm saying, finger foods and things like that. It's supposed to be a festive time. And I just busted into tears, you know what I'm saying, listening to what was going on and, you know, just that level of fear and just kind of going back and forth. And what was even more powerful afterwards, like, it was brothers just shared their love for each other, sisters too. And we all just kind of comforted each other, like, yo, we're going to get through this together. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to get through this together. It was a powerful moment that, like, you know, we just kind of had to be there to experience.
I later asked Marcel about where did the album Cry Freedom land along with the rest of his discography with respect to its cultural relevance.
So Cry Freedom was supposed to be my first album. I literally started on it July of 2008, and I knew it was special. I knew it was something different. And it didn't come out until July 2016. It went through many different formations, but I knew the production I was getting, I knew it was different. And I was kind of like, anytime I had had opportunity to get like a feature with a bigger name, I would put it to the side for this particular album. So it was supposed to be my first project, but I'm glad it didn't come out then because I wasn't ready in 2008. As an artist, as a man, as a youth worker, you know, it's the difference between being 25 and 30, 32. You know what I'm saying? As it pertains to, you know, when I started working on it, I wasn't married and having kids. I was still in college. You know what I'm saying? When it came out, I'm a 10 plus year youth development working veteran, working in the streets of Baton Rouge with young people. I'm a father. I'm a husband. I'm more established. My politics have expanded. And so Cry Freedom, even though it wasn't my first album, it will always be my baby, you know what I'm saying? Because I put everything, I put my whole life into it, right? So it has, even though it was like my third album and I don't know how many projects, it literally, the album grew with me and you can hear it in the album. It's a mixture of country rap tunes, black empowerment, and just straight up soul music, you know what I'm saying? It's church music for the streets. I would say not necessarily a pivot, but it was a turning point for me because it was the first album where people finally understood what I've been rapping about for 10 years. and unfortunately it took, you know, and not just after Sterling, right? We fresh off of Mike Brown. You got Eric Garner, you got, you know what I'm saying? All these other people, Sandra Bland. It was just a string. Got between like 2012 and 2000, you know, beginning with Trayvon Martin between 2000, and it's still going on right now, but 2012 to 2016, it was a string of police murders and a whole bunch of uprisings going around the country, a whole bunch of rebellions going around across the country. And I think it came out like literally right in between Alton Sterling and what's my guy in Minnesota?
Fernando Castillo.
And so it was just really fresh. And I think it was the first time where people understood, because where I lived at, you know, in Baton Rouge is not known for conscious rap. Even though a lot of political struggle and a lot of black empowerment struggle took place in Baton Rouge, a lot of revolutionaries come from Louisiana. It's not a haven for conscious rap or that type of music. And I was one of the few people doing it, you know what I'm saying? Specifically out of Baton Rouge and Louisiana overall. So I think it finally hit the 225, and I feel like people finally understood what I've been rapping about. Cry Freedom had a different level of clarity in terms of, like, the intent was clear. The messaging was very clear. It was, you know, the beats jammed. Joe did his thing. It was mixed. So it was, there was nothing about it that would make you be like, let me cut this off because it's conscious. Like, no, it's very relevant. It's talking about what's going on outside right now, and it's still slap. And I think and then that's when people was like, I understand why Marcel is always talking about pushing back against white supremacy, why he's always talking about black freedom, why he's always talking about the kids. I understand why. I understand why he's anti-police brutality. He's pro-abolition of the police. I understand why, you know, and I think so. It was definitely a turning point for me.
Marcel and I pivoted to a conversation about another standout song on Cry Freedom called Boss Nigga, which featured St. Louis rapper and activist Tuff Poe. Tuff Poe was an instrumental freedom fighter in Ferguson in the aftermath of Michael Brown being killed in 2014, and I wanted to get Marcel's thoughts on what it means to work with fellow artists who walk the walk they rhyme about.
I really got my arrest from standing in tear gas. Like, Tuff Poe and Nothing Brand Nubian, Nothing Dead Prez, Nothing Public Enemy, Nothing X-Clan, no rapper ever created an album while on the front lines, ever. All our favorite conscious rapper rapped about what was going on. Like, literally, when this album, Tempo's album, was it the War Machine, I want to say? War Machine 2? When it dropped, he literally got out of jail that day. The same day it dropped. I look at Tempo, I can't even call myself an activist, honestly. Like, you talk about somebody who was literally on the front lines. He literally was a part of the reason why the whole world knows about Ferguson. It was the hip-hop scene community in St. Louis who stood tall, because he had been doing activist organizing work. And so he was there, him and T-Dub-O. You know what I'm saying? Bringing the streets together, bringing the hip-hop community together, and then everybody else came. Then Black Lives Matter came, then everybody else came. But they was there first. And so it meant everything. Like what you're hearing on that, you know, what do you say? In meetings with Farrakhan, smelling like Doja. Like, that's real. Like, zero cap in that rap at all. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, I call him Tef Pac. That's Pac right there. Like, true, he's a true revolutionary of our time MC, and just an organizer, just, you know, and he's an incredible dude. Like, I met him right after he was Unsigned Hype in the Source of 2012. And when I had that record, you know, the whole song was about organizing the streets to fight back against, you know what I'm saying, white supremacist oppression. And there was no better artist to reach out to, you know what I'm saying? And it took him forever to get me the verse because he was getting out of jail for protesting. Yeah, every time we had a, you know what I'm saying? But he was in and out of jail for protesting and standing up and things of that nature. And he had court dates and he was doing all this other stuff. And he was being, you know, being going to the White House and, you know, going. He went to Geneva. They went to Geneva to call the Ferguson police up on war crimes. You know what I'm saying? That's what Malcolm X was talking about. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So I had to, you know, I had to get him on the record. And it was just powerful, man. It was, you know, literally, like, I remember, you know, when Ferguson first popped off, I called, I linked him up with Jasiri X, and he kind of, you know, pledged his support and, you know, said whatever I can do. And when Aljo Sterling's situation popped off at Baton Rouge, him and T-Dub O was like, yo, you know, I got a lot of counsel from them, and as they let us know what we can do from there, whatever. So it was like a natural connection between us two that I'm glad we'll ever be linked in that capacity.
I was curious about Marcel's thoughts on rappers who have monetized off the Black Lives Matter era in their music, and what it meant for him as an MC who has consistently advocated for Black lives in his music.
That's who I am, man. I'm a son of a gospel musician, and I grew up watching my father say things that touch people. So I can make, you know, I'm an artist. I can do whatever I want to, but that's what's on my spirit to make, right? It just so happens that I grew up in hip hop, became a fan of conscious hip hop, and that's my ministry. You know what I'm saying? So it's like asking the preacher, what's it like to preach now everybody's religious? I was preaching before I'm be preaching afterwards, right? You're right. I mean, I'm gonna say this from a, if we just take the art side out of it, I've definitely, you know, I've benefited, you know what I'm saying? Because it's cool now, right? You got J. Cole, you know, J. Cole with Music in the Message, Kendrick Lamar, thank God for Killer Mike, He's a large black man who, you know what I'm saying, who raps aggressively about black power. And so it kind of gives me a popular, it kind of gives me a popular person to be compared to. But people say, well, you rap like or whatever. But I mean, I remember being in Baton Rouge and nobody wanted to rap with me because I was a conscious rapper. And then, you know, as things kind of happened and Black Lives Matter, things of that became trendy. I became the go-to guy if you needed a black a pro-black feature on your song, right? And when it goes away, I'm still going to be dropping this because this is what I do. And the thing about it is because I worked in the community. Like, I'm going to rap about the conditions that I see. I lived in Baton Rouge for 19 years, worked in some of the roughest zip codes, like 70805 has some of the highest murder rates, AIDS rates, middle school dropout rates, teenage pregnancy rates in the country. And coincidentally, this is the area code Aldous Sterling was killed in or whatever, was lynched in. So while I'm in these trenches, while I'm out here with these babies, while I'm out here, you know, I'm the dude when you know, the guy that you shoot, not you, but like the guy that the gangster rapper shoots and makes their child an orphan, I'm the person counseling them. Right, I'm the person mentoring them. You know, when the drugs you sell to the single mother that has this lady in jail. You know what I'm saying? I'm the one, whatever. So, those are the conditions that's what I live. That's what I lived. That's what I live now. Even as an educator up in Oklahoma, like that's what I'm gonna talk about. And you can never have enough. Like for everybody not talking about nothing, I got it for everybody. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what the Most High put it on my heart to do. So yes, it's sexy, it's trendy. You see people riding the wave. And what's funny about it, just like as my politics grow, right? I'm further left than Black Lives Matter. As my politics grow, you know what I'm saying? And you know, it's a lot of I don't know, man. It's just a lot of there's a whole Black resistance complex right now. A whole bunch of people are getting a whole bunch of money off of, you know, these type of situations. And it's just like, man, and all that's cool, whatever. Well, it's not cool, but the point I'm trying to make is this. Somebody got to do the work. Somebody got to do the work where it's uninterrupted. It's not about the money. Somebody got to do the work. Somebody got to really talk about what's going on. Making it plain, as Malcolm X would say. And I was telling one of my white homeboys the other day, I gave y'all everything I love, which was about like me more than my father. I was like, y'all white folks better get that one, because I'm going right back to the black. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've spent a lot of time during the pandemic reading and studying and listening and just retooling my political education. And I'm further left and more radical than I was, even to cry freedom, whatever. And that's what was on my heart to do. And the Most High has allowed me to be able to, make music that people resonate with. And so that's what I'm gonna keep doing.
The last thing I wanted to know from Marcel was his thoughts on his legacy as a socio-conscious MC. And what type of legacy did he want the album Cry Freedom to leave after he has retired from the mic?
When it's all said and done, I want to be remembered as someone, a man who stood tall both in action and in song, a man with good intention, who talked and really lived it, who never sold his soul or relied on a gimmick. Someday. You know what I'm saying? Like, somebody who, you know, ain't no cap in my raps. You know what I'm saying? Somebody who really had good politics, really had good intentions, really had a heart and love for people. You know what I'm saying? Really, really stood on it. Like, I want you to be able to go through my discography and be like, yeah, he was consistent. You know, I mean, everybody says things that they're not proud of. It might be a couple things. One time I mentioned R. Kelly on the song, and one time I called myself a bully when I know bullying is bad. But other than that, I stand by everything I've ever said on my raps. You know what I'm saying? And if you ask me about anything, I could point you to a book. I could point you to a podcast. I could point you to what I really did. You know what I'm saying? What I really saw. I could point you to data. You know what I'm saying? I'm a history major. I could point you to the history of it, right? And a person like I want to be remembered. You know, I'm from Southern Oklahoma, but Marcel P. Black, the artist, was born and bred in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So I want to be considered intellectually. You know what I'm saying? I want to be considered adding to the legacy of intelligent voices and revolutionary voices from Louisiana, just like Huey P. Newton, just like H-Rap Brown, you know what I'm saying? Just like Geronimo Pratt and that tradition of Black revolutionary intelligent people who love their folk and try to get free. Like I want to be considered the hip hop version of that, you know, that particular legacy. Been from Oklahoma, Ralph Ellis, an Invisible Man, you know what I'm saying? Cornel West is born in Tulsa, you feel me? Like adding to that canon of freedom fighters, specifically being from the South, where people overlook for that type of thing, for that type of content. I want, being a history major, when it comes to hip hop, I always say, I always tell people the first form of Black freedom began with slave hymns during the peculiar institution of chattel slavery. One of the first freedoms that enslaved Africans had was the ability to sing, right? To sing. And they used this particular voice to these songs to communicate. So Wade in the Wild Angels of Church record, it's a runaway slave map. You feel me? I once cried freedom to go down as a Negro spiritual, the song, like Wade in the Water. Like I want it to be like, you know, there's no profanity on the record. I did that on purpose. Like that's my, if anybody's watched me perform live, like I'm a church boy. So you begin with the opening prayer and whatever, the benediction, and it ends with the altar call. So Cry Freedom is my, that's my altar call, you know what I'm saying? And I want that to go down as a Negro spiritual, as a song that is about pining and striving and just putting your heart and soul on the line for Black freedom.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Word Life. Be sure to check us out next Thursday for another episode, and be sure to leave a gold star review. Until then, peace, creativity, and revolution.